Izamit Carr, and I'm Telly Concepcion, and together we are Beyond the Numbers Podcast. We go beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. So come learn, grow, and have some fun with us. We are Beyond the Numbers Podcast.
On today's episode, the guys go beyond the numbers of the 2020 College Football Playoff National Championship game. Alabama does it again. In NFL Nuggets, they go beyond the numbers of Week 18 of the 2020 NFL season and NFL Wildcard Weekend. But first, their numbers of the day.
My number of the day is 17. 2 years removed from 17 surgeries to save his right leg after an infected compound fracture threatened his life 25 months ago, Alex Smith led his team to the playoffs. Washington Red Tails made it. Unfortunately, Alex was unable to play in the game, but more on that coming up.
My number for the day is 2. Blake Bortles has more playoff wins, 2, since 2017 than Philip Rivers, who has 1, Matt Ryan with 1, Russell Wilson with 1, and Ben Roethlisberger with 0.
Before the business, Beyonders, it's time for Before the Business, where we answer your unanswered questions and find the numbers that went unfound in previous episodes. So Amit, we're a weekly show. A lot happens in a week, and we want to make sure we keep our Beyonders up to date on all the action. We've got a lot to get to this week, so let's get to it.
Let's talk about it. So the big news, right? I live in Brooklyn. James Harden was traded from the Houston Rockets to the New York Nets.
That's right.
But the Eagles fired coach Doug Peterson this week. We were critical, so I definitely wanted to get this piece in because we were critical of coach Doug Peterson last week in our NFL Nuggets segment. Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie's decision to fire coach Doug Peterson may have stemmed from a difference of opinion about who should be the team's starting quarterback going forward. Peterson thought Jalen Hurts gives the Eagles the best chance to win, and Jeffrey Lurie, the owner and the boss, wants to salvage the career of Carson Wentz. This was according to Troy Aikman, who said on Michael Irving's podcast that he spoke to Coach Peterson after Coach Doug Peterson was fired. So I got to take 2 steps back. I mean, we were extremely critical of Doug Peterson's decision to bench Jalen Hurts at the end of the game against the Washington Red Tails last week. We thought he was doing this to send a message that he didn't like Jalen Hurts. He didn't want Jalen Hurts, and that Carson Wentz was his guy. He was doing the opposite. And actually, I think he knew he was getting fired, and he just wanted to let his third string guy play in the rest of that game and send a message to ownership that, like, yo, Jalen Hurts is the guy. And if you guys don't want it, I'll show you what you got left here. Coming out of Houston, Deshaun Watson wants out. He's throwing up the deuces. He's tired of it. And what a year Houston sports are having. They just lost James Harden. They're about to lose Deshaun Watson. Had the Houston Texans stayed the course and followed the recommendations of the search firm Korn Ferry, they likely would have hired Pittsburgh Steelers Vice President of Football and Business Administration Omar Khan as their next general manager, league sources told ESPN. Khan and ESPN Monday Night Football analyst Louis Riddick, who are both minority candidates, were the two finalists before Texas owner Cal McNair changed his mind, ignored the recommendations of the search firm he paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to do weeks of work, and instead hired former New England Patriots director of player personnel Nick Caserio. Multiple people in the Texans organization, including Deshaun Watson, were upset with how Houston's search took a sudden and unexpected turn, hiring a man that Korn Ferry did not include on its list of candidates. The Texans, Amit, in my opinion, did not want to hire a minority candidate to the front office. They ignored the advice of a hiring firm who put forth 2 minority candidates. And when you pay that much money, and Korn Ferry, they're pros. They're charged with finding CEOs, C-suite level for all across the board in this country, not just football. They did their due diligence. They did their research. They put forth two candidates of color. The owner ripped that up and said, I'm going to do my own thing, and I'm going to hire a lower ranked individual from the Patriots organization. Also, the owner told Deshaun Watson he would be involved in any and all decisions, and they hired this person before they involved Deshaun. And I think he was pissed. And if you have the power to flex your muscle to get more minorities involved in the front office, I applaud that.
His team, he can do what he wants. He can spend as much money as he wants to hire a firm to tell him what he needs to do. And then it really is his choice at the end.
The University of Texas, though, horns down. And BTN 19, we told you guys about the students asking for the racist song they sing to be changed or not sung before or during football games. The Eyes of Texas plays at football games and other sports events at the University of Texas at Austin. Texas athletes have called for the school to stop playing the song over the summer, citing its racist ties. The song is set to the tune of I've Been Working on the Railroad, and it debuted in 1903 at a campus minstrel show featuring white students performing in blackface. There has been resistance to the song before, and Professor Gordon of the University of Texas said in the late 1990s and early 2000s, some student athletes refused to stand when the song was played, but their efforts did not go far. And in 2018, the student government held a debate over whether to stop singing the song. Well, new coach, same racism. It looks like Steve Sarkisian is doubling down on this song and on this idea. One of the first questions Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator for Alabama, who was just hired as the new head coach of the University of Texas, concerned the Texas school song, The Eyes of Texas, which was exposed in recent months for its roots in racism. Sarkisian's answer to this question, Beyonders, we're going to sing it proudly. I know this much, The Eyes of Texas is our song. We support that song. Also, we're going to sing that song. We're going to sing it proudly. And as it pertains to the Eyes of Texas, that's our song, and we're fired up to sing it. So not only did he double down on the racism, he made sure to answer the question several times during his introductory press conference. Great job, Steve Sarkisian. On your first day on the job, you could have played dumb. You could have said you had no idea. And in a sport where 80% of your team or more is African-American, you chose to side with a song when asked about it rather than, I'll have to look into that. I'm not exactly sure what you're referring to. I'll have to learn about that. I'll have a conversation with players on the team about how it makes them feel. No, he straight up, doubled down on a racist song that was sung on campus in whiteface and was written in part to salute a Confederate soldier. I'm just nodding my head, man.
Thursday, January 14th, 2021. Are you even surprised with anything anymore?
Students sung it in blackface. It honors a Confederate soldier. You coach men that look a certain way, I would assume, I would think, but maybe not. And Nick Saban seems like he does really care about his players and his guys. And I haven't heard of any controversies coming out of Nick Saban's program or Alabama. So you would think he's been in that program for a couple of years and maybe learned a thing or two, but maybe not. Read a book, man. Read a newspaper. Figure out what's going on. You coach young men. Does this make me comfortable to go? So you're recruiting, and my options are University of Florida, University of Texas, and Ohio State. Do you think I want to go to the one where the head coach was like, yeah, we definitely want to sing the racist song. We love the racist song. Or am I going to go to another university? And this is your first press conference. Guys read. Guys are online. Guys are educated. So good luck to him, man. Good luck recruiting that.
Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer looks like he will be the next coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Talks are definitely heating up between the Jags and Urban. And by the time you hear this podcast on Sunday, I sense that he may be their head coach.
Boat Warnock worked. Reverend Warnock defeated Kelly Loeffler, and in part, we can thank the WNBA. In BTN 20, in Wubble News, we shared that Senator Kenny Loeffler, a WNBA co-owner of the Atlanta Dream, wrote a letter to WNBA Commissioner Kathy Engelbert, objecting to the league's promotion of Black Lives Matter. She was also trading stocks with the information she was receiving, allegedly, as a senator, particularly as it pertained to the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. The players have a right to free speech, and they wore Vote Warnock t-shirts the week of August 3rd, 2020. Well, their fight paid off. Thank you, WNBA. Due to their courageous leadership and push in a contentious election, Reverend Warnock has beat Kelly Loeffler for a Senate seat. And don't you worry, Kelly, we'll take that pesky WNBA team off your hands as well. I'm sure you don't want to manage all those Black ladies. So LeBron James has offered to buy the team from you. Chamath Palihapitiya has offered to put up the money for him and LeBron to buy the team. So let's get that team. Atlanta Dream. LeBron James will be able to own a professional team, Ahmed, and I think that's been his goal all along. Coming up, you guys will hear the reaction to last week's events. You'll hear LeBron James, Coach Popovich, Dame Lillard, Anthony Davis, and LaMarcus Aldridge thoughts.
Meditation reduces stress and increases kindness. That's a scientific fact. LeBron James incorporating mental fitness into his daily game plan. Not that long ago, he tweeted this: stay positive in your thoughts, words, and actions. Ask for balance and love. James is very active on Twitter. It is very noticeable that James did not post anything Wednesday. It's certainly not because he doesn't have strong opinions on the subject matter at hand. He's the face and voice of a very powerful league. If only we could all be on the same team.
We live in two Americas. And that was prime example of that yesterday. And if you don't understand that or don't see that after seeing what you saw yesterday, then you you really need to take a step back, not even just one step, maybe four or five or even 10 steps backwards, and ask yourself how do you want your kids, or how do you want, your grandkids? How do we want America to be viewed as? How do we want to live, in this beautiful country? Because yesterday was not it.
Yesterday, I think the big picture for me was how it just laid bare the blatant, dangerous, debilitating racism that is our country's sin and has plagued us all these years. There can't be a better obvious example of a system that is not fair as far as justice and equal rights are concerned and protection of citizens. It was just right in your face, and anybody that can ignore that is a shameful individual, in my opinion.
It's just disappointing. It's disappointing that that's acceptable, and it's not viewed the same as people protesting and people fighting just for something like equality, and not being called protesters, being called terrorists and criminals and things like that. And it's not viewed the same. I think that's an issue, but it's an even bigger issue that it was just accepted. It was acceptable. It was like, you got people at Nancy Pelosi's desk. Like, come on.
Couldn't help but to wonder if those were my kind storming the Capitol, what would have been the outcome? And I think we all know. It's no ifs, ands, or buts. We already know what would have happened to my kind if anyone would have even got close to the Capitol, let alone storm and inside the offices, inside the hallways.
When the Black Lives Matter protesting, it was once the looting starts, the shooting starts. And to my knowledge, if you take something, you're looting. And in that case, for them, they got escorted out the front door. And it's a slap in the face to us. It's a, it feels like, you know, we're going backwards. You know, we thought we were seeing change, and you know, then this happens.
Hopefully, it's a lot of people that's upset about this because it's not okay, and that is kind of what we've been going through, you know, our whole lives of, you know, we fear the cops, but then you had those guys yesterday who was taking selfies with the cops, pointing guns back at the cops. It's just a different feeling growing up in this country, and I feel like we have to work at this to change it, and I feel like the people who don't understand how bad yesterday was, just in general, they're, you know, they're a part of the problem for sure.
It's unfair to try to get people to understand, but we want people to listen. There's some things that you can't understand because you don't grow up how we grew up. You don't live in the same environment that we live in. You don't see the fact that when we walk out of our homes or we walk out of our project buildings or we walk out of our apartments, that we're scared to death right off bat because we're afraid of the police. And that's just how I grew up. When you seen the police, you ran the other way. You didn't feel like it was protection. You never felt like it was protection. So we can't make you understand. We don't. Do you understand? We want you in a sense of, do you understand what we're saying? Because you will never understand the feeling that we feel being a Black man or being a Black woman growing up in America. We don't get anything back for what we've given to this country besides a slap in the face. And they're going to say, okay, well, you know, you should shut up and dribble, which I've heard numerous of times, but I'm never going to do that. And they're going to say, you got so many other opportunities. So many guys are in leagues and all that stuff. But, man, that's peanuts. It's peanuts to what goes on in this country. And yesterday was just very shameful. And I'll just say embarrassing to us. As the example, I grew up knowing that America was the land of the free and the home of the brave. And we set an example for all these other countries in the world of how to run things and how to be great and how to, you know, maneuver and change the world and things of that nature. And yesterday we looked like a third, fourth, fifth world country. It's just very embarrassing. And I hope we can be better.
Time for our new segment, Amit, College Football Corner. It just felt right. There were so many stories that we were going to try. This is a production note to squeeze them before the business. But I was like, you know what? College football is too important for that. So we got to give it its own segment. Let's go beyond the numbers of the college football playoff national championship game. And this featured Ohio State against Alabama. These teams ranked first and second in offensive efficiency this season, but the final score was 52-24, and it really wasn't even that close. As I predicted, Amit, SEC.
Honestly, it was fun for me to watch a team that, you know, won seven games get blown out by a team that almost had twice the schedule of them.
I know you were calling for anarchy last week. What if Ohio State wins? Listen, I'm like, nah, listen, there's no
that
way.
Would have been no listen way. if that was the Ohio State score, right? If Ohio State had won 52-24, can you imagine the madness of the sheer madness that would have happened with people saying they've won eight games.
I said last week, it would have set a dangerous precedent where we schedule six games, and we call it a day. And my Gators were undefeated after six games. Many teams around the country were undefeated after six games. So you would be rewarding teams that don't rise up to the occasion of facing more teams. And sure, it would just limit college football around the country.
I expected... I mean, I don't know. I think I expected Ohio State, the way they put a shellacking in their last game, I expected that offense to come playing.
On Clemson?
Yeah, and I think you have that point. And I think the funny part of that was, I don't know if you remember, before the game, they asked Ohio State's coach, you know, how's Justin Fields doing? And he said he's at 95%. And when they asked Justin Fields how he was doing, at about 75%. Clearly he wasn't there, right, fully physically. And I'm not saying that even if he was at 100%, what would have happened in that game. But
I mean, they weren't able to run. They weren't able to control the line of scrimmage.
Nothing.
The defensive line was getting in there. The offensive line was letting Mac Jones do whatever he wanted, really. They thoroughly controlled the game. I mean, I don't even think the score really indicates how lopsided the game was. Although it was an entertaining game, it was very lopsided.
So a lot of people said that last year's LSU team was the best offense in college football history, or one of the best offenses in college football history. You got to think this Alabama team is up there.
And it's an all SEC schedule. Okay, yep. So there's no like North Dakota, Southeastern College of Phoenix Online that they played this year, right? They played an all SEC school, all SEC schedule. They stayed healthy. And like Nick Saban said, he was crying afterwards. I saw him smiling. I saw emotion out of Nick Saban. You know, a lot of times he just looks like a robot, but it just looked like he cared about it. And the team did what they had to do to get together and get the win. Remember, guys came back for this season. Devonta Smith could have been drafted, came back for the season. Okay. Also, they had a couple other guys that could have been drafted, including the running back that could have been drafted and decided to stay. They stayed. They got the job done. That was their mission this year. I can't even imagine how they feel. Let's go beyond the numbers of Alabama right now. So Alabama averaged 48.5 points per game this season. That's the most in SEC history. Alabama won 12 of 13 games by 15 or more points. That includes both CFP games, college football playoff games. Total, Alabama now has 13 national titles. They're the first wire-to-wire number one team in the college football playoff rankings to win the national championship. And they've had a player get drafted in the first round, every first round since 2008.
And of their 13 national championship titles, if you think about this, since 2009, they have won six. So over the last 12 seasons, Bama has six national championships.
How long has Nick Saban been coaching there?
Did he start in 09?
12 seasons. And he's won six titles. He's lost two. And he's been in the playoffs or the conversation of all the other ones. So that's what you're talking about. When you can build a program, and this was my worry, and you see my Gators were in the conversation 2006. We won it all. 2008, we won it all. We had coaching changes. There's turnovers. There's turmoil. You don't know what's going on. It's hard to keep consistency in a program. You see Alabama's had the same coach, and they just reload and reload and reload. And it's tough to match up against.
The other six titles were between Ohio State, LSU, Clemson, FSU, and Auburn. Combined make up those other six titles in those last 12 years. So
Big Ten got one, SEC, 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 ACC, yep. Got two. Okay. All right. I was just checking. Out of all of those, three non-SEC, the rest SEC. I was just checking.
Let's look at that national championship team, and specifically Devontae Smith. This season was absolutely insane. You know, when he won the Heisman Trophy, I was like, wait, what? A wide receiver? What's going on here? But I think he showed us in that national championship game, a man can play, and he is a game changer.
No so doubt. He balled out in the game. He definitely balled out in the game, so kudos to him.
And if you looked at his stats, just wild. You would have assumed that he played a whole game and was just all over the place, let alone just the first half of a game. Let's look at his resume from this season. Heisman Trophy winner, national championship. He led college football in receptions, reception yards, and receiving touchdowns. He set an SEC career record for receiving yards and receiving touchdowns. And he set the single season record for reception yards and receiving touchdowns in the SEC. And he set a first half national championship game record for receptions, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns. He was a beast all season. In your SEC, I think the Jets have to pick him up at number two.
Do you know what else he did?
What else did he do?
He improved his draft stock, and Nick Saban made a point to say this after the game. So many guys leave early. They leave. He was a first round pick last year. He was a early second or late first round pick last year. But you know what he is now? A top 10 guaranteed bona fide pick by staying another year and showing off what he's got. So a lot of guys leave early, and they say if you can go in the first round, you should go and get that money. He stayed. He wanted to win a national championship. They got so close, and they ended up losing. He did that. Not only did he do that, he set all these records, and he's setting himself up to get paid for years to come. So, like I said, shouts out to him. On the Ohio State side, they only played 8 games, Amit, and this was really our complaint. We didn't say, are they good enough to go to the national championship? Do they deserve to go to the national championship? The argument, if you go back and listen to last week's episode, BTN 42, the episode before that, BTN 41, how can a team that's played 6 games have enough resume to consider to be one of the best teams in the entire country when teams have played 10, 11, and 12 games? But there we had it. Ohio State only played 8 games total this season, including a playoff game and including the national championship game. It was not entirely their fault. The Big Ten held strong for a while, and we brought you this on an earlier episode in BTN 26, but then they gave in to the idea of college football because that money was a calling on it. That money was calling, and other conferences were playing. They were seeking their 9th national championship for the Ohio State University, and it would have been their first since 2014, but they got Alabama as their opponent, and all time Ohio State is 1-4 against Alabama. That's their worst winning percentage against any opponent all time, tied for the same winning percentage they have against Clemson. They were able to exercise that demon against Clemson, not so much against Alabama. And I told you last week that Nick Saban would remember the loss they had to Ohio State when the college football playoff started. The first game of the college football playoff where Nick Saban was beaten by then Urban Meyer's Ohio State Buckeyes. There's no way he was letting that go. So who's the second best team in the nation, Amit? Ohio State clearly dropped the ball. Some people say, okay, it's Ohio State. Maybe it's Ohio State, right? Do you think it's Ohio State? They lost to the number one team, so maybe it's them. I'm not sure.
I tell you what, I know you don't think it's Ohio State.
You can see my notes, so you know where I'm going with this, but no, I don't think
I don't need your notes.
But I'm just saying, to tell you that. Who's the second best team in the nation? This is Beyond the Numbers podcast, so we got to come with it. So there was only one team that Alabama did not beat by 15 or more points. You just said Alabama could be the best offense or the best team of all time. They were saying they felt like they're the best team of all time after the game. So there's only one team that Alabama didn't beat by 15 or more points this season, including the college football playoffs and the national championship game. Would it be fair to say that team is the runner-up? Would it be fair to say a team that scored 46 on Alabama would be the second best team in the nation, a team that averaged 40 points per game? Because my Florida Gators only lost to Alabama 52-46, so we scored twice the points Ohio State did and held them to the same amount of points that Ohio State held them to. We held, I say this in quotations, Devontae Smith to only 15 receptions for 184 yards and only 2 touchdowns, but that was for the whole game. They couldn't do that for a half against my man. We held him to that for a whole game. And I say this in jest, but in all seriousness, if you go back and watch the SEC championship game and you watch the college football playoff games, there's no question that game was better than any of the college football playoff games that we saw. It was just a better game all around, a more complete game, a more back and forth. There was more parity in our game against Alabama for the SEC championship game than there was in this national championship game between Ohio State and Alabama. It just wasn't there. And the score, like I said, just doesn't indicate how separate these teams were. 52-24. And that's 7 points they got in the fourth quarter when it was already out of hand, where you're looking at the Gators who were pushing it at the end, 52-46. And if we didn't let them get that touchdown right before halftime, we would have been a lot closer.
Raise that runner-up banner. And you could have a ceremony.
Second in the country. Seconds. Because
you could have that right next to UCF's national championship banner that they have. Yeah,
put that next to them. Put that next to
them. You could just have it in the same line right next to each other.
It'd be fantastic. My point here really is, you know, by process of elimination, let's say we're ranking a number two team based on the games we saw just on the eye test. You can eliminate Clemson. They got bowled over by Ohio State. They couldn't do anything. You can eliminate Notre Dame. Notre Dame did nothing against Clemson nothing against Alabama. That's two in a row. And then Ohio State just got showed out by a tough Alabama team. And I said the whole season, Alabama just looked like it was in a different level of competition than everybody else. So Alabama beat Texas A&M by a ton. Like I said, I say it in jest, we lost a couple of games we shouldn't have lost, most especially the LSU game. But if you really look at it that way, we played Alabama the toughest all season. And if we're saying Alabama's in a whole class of its own, and we're saying that Alabama is the best team in the country by at least 10 teams, like no one's close, the Gators played Alabama the closest this whole season.
You're not wrong at all. I'll give you that.
Gator fans, I know we have a lot of Gators. Listen to Beyond the Numbers podcast. Number two in the country this season, not bad. Played Alabama tough, not bad. We need to get in a college football playoff and show what's up. So we need to get that done. It's time for our new segment, NFL Nuggets, where we go beyond the numbers and bring you the stories within the story of the stories that matter within the NFL. NFL Nuggets, beyond the numbers of week 18 in the NFL, which aka Wild Card Weekend. Six playoff games in one weekend. And actually, Beyonders, it's not a record. More playoff games on a Saturday, Sunday. It's happened only once. On this weekend, 38 years ago in 1982, there was a 57-day player strike and the league changed the postseason rules. With only 9 regular season games per team, 16 teams would make the playoffs. That meant Wild Card Weekend was an 8-game weekend. And even the NFL realized that 8 games was not enough to determine which teams were good enough to enter the playoffs. So they just said, you know what? All of y'all can get in these playoffs. So there were 3 games Saturday, 3 games on Sunday. This year, we'll go in order. Let's start with Saturday's 3 games. And we'll start with the first game, Amit.
It was the number 7 seed Colts versus the number 2 seed Buffalo Bills. And of course, as you know, the Bills went on to win 27-24. First playoff win since 1995, 5 months before their starting quarterback, Josh Allen, was born, as we shared with you guys last week. 25 years is the fourth longest span in NFL history between playoff wins. Number 1 is 52 years by the Chicago/St. Louis/Arizona Cardinals. So yes, 52 years, that's how many places that team has switched in that time frame.
52 years, 3 moves, and they still haven't gotten it done. So quarterback play, Josh Allen was 26 of 35, 2 touchdowns, 0 picks, 324 yards, 54 rush yards. He had a 74.3 completion. That's the highest completion percentage in Bills postseason history. And remember, they had the man. They had Jim Kelly.
First Bills quarterback to throw for 300 or more yards with 0 interceptions in a playoff game.
And Phillip Rivers went 27 for 46, 2 touchdowns, 0 picks, 309 yards, -1 rush yard. So very similar play from the quarterbacks, but Josh Allen was just able to do some things on it that Phillip Rivers was not. Like, throw that touchdown from his knees as he was getting tackled that went in the back of the end zone, which was pretty amazing. He scrambled. I already told you about the 54 rush yards. I mean, he was just doing things that Phillip Rivers at 39 could not do. And it's not like Phillip Rivers didn't play. He balled out. I told you, no picks, two touchdowns, 27 for 46. It just happened that Josh Allen and the Bills outplayed the Colts on Saturday. The next game was the Rams against the Seahawks, Amit. And I got to be real with you. If we would have picked teams last week, I would have got this one wrong. The number six Rams against the number three Seahawks. They split the season series 1-1. Wolford had to be taken out of the game after a hit to the head. Jared Goff just had surgery on his thumb last week. It's pretty hard to throw when you have surgery on your thumb. He seemed to get more comfortable as the game went on. And then Aaron Donald, after their win last week, said that is exactly what they wanted, to travel to Seattle and play the Seahawks. Well, guess what? Aaron Donald backed that up. In his 15 pass rush snaps, he had two sacks. One was almost for a safety. He had three hits, one QB hurry. His six pressures led the Rams, and oh, by the way, he didn't play in the whole game. He got hurt in this one, bringing down Russell Wilson. It was crazy to see him get hurt because, one, he never gets hurt. Two, we saw him shirtless in Hard Knocks, and it was hard to see that. How do his ribs get hurt? Because they seem to be locked behind a steel cage. But we also know, and we've broken this news on Beyond the Numbers podcast, that Russell Wilson spends over $1 million a year to keep his body right, and he has Sierra cooking for him. So out of that $1 million, I think he has some armor put in because Russell fell on Aaron Donald and hurt Aaron Donald. I don't know how that happens when Aaron Donald hit Russell. Russ went 11 for 27, two touchdowns, one interception, 174 yards, 50 rush yards, but the real numbers, beyond the numbers of those numbers, he was pressured on half of his dropbacks against the Rams. That's the highest this season and the second highest of his playoff career. He was only 6 of 15 on passes of 10 or fewer yards, including a pick six that I was yelling at my TV. There's no way he should have thrown that ball. That was a guaranteed pick. They knew the play. That was the worst completion percentage of his career. His QBR was 17.6. 17.6. His worst in a playoff game, the fifth worst of his career. Three of his five worst games of his whole career, Beyonders, have come this season against the Rams this season. They had won previously 10 straight playoff games at home, and that was totally blown up. So Aaron Donald was onto something when he said, that's exactly what we wanted. The Rams have the Seahawks number this season.
Yeah, and remember, Telly, you and I both had Russell Wilson heading into this season as the MVP. And through five games, did he look like the MVP of this league? Russ was cooking, right? First five games of the season, averaged 300.4 yards a game, 72.8% completion rate. He had 19 touchdowns to three interceptions in five games. He had 129.9 passer rating, and he was a perfect 5-0. But after that, things shifted. And in the last 12 games, he averaged 230.4 yards a game. He only had a 65.4% completion percentage. He had 23 touchdowns and 11 interceptions in 12 games versus 19-3 in 5. He had a 92.9 passer rating and, you know, a 7-5 record, which, look, as a Giants fan, I'll take 7-5 any day, right? Best season ever. But for Russell Wilson and that Seahawks team, that was a rough turnaround to watch them kind of fall apart. And he looked lost in some of those games.
He definitely did. I mean, there's no O-line. Russ hasn't had an O-line for a while. I think we broke out to you guys how many sacks he's taken in the start of his career, and it's the most of all time of any quarterback. So he's never had protection. That's why they pay him. That's why he pumps $1 million into his body every year to make sure that his body could withstand all the pain. And like I said, the Rams, they're in division. They play them twice a year. They must see something on the film and in the tape that lets them know they own Seattle for the time being, unless Seattle makes major changes to the O-line and to their game approach. So Sean McVay, Amit, 36-0 in leading at halftime, 1-0 in the playoffs, that held true. Cam Akers, 176 scrimmage yards. That's the second most by a rookie in a playoff debut of all time. And I have to say, and I wrote this during the game in my notes, this game was pretty bad and this game was pretty sloppy. And to me, neither one of these teams looked like playoff teams. It was just a bad showing all around. And I don't think either one of these teams, the Rams won now, I don't think they get very much further in the playoffs.
Yeah, but the Rams have taken one step closer to the LA Triple Crown, right? You had your Tampa Triple Crown.
They did. We got the, that's true.
One step closer.
I just don't see these Rams being like the Lakers and being like the I don't see it.
No, I don't either.
Crazier things happen. We saw the Browns do some crazy things this past weekend, but I don't see it.
I agree. The Seahawks ended their season with just two total wins against teams that are in the playoffs this season. You want to know who else also finished with that same number of wins against playoff teams this year? The New York Jets. That's right. Jets, Seahawks, pretty much the same team.
And the team, the game I was ready for, Amit, my number five Tampa Bay Buccaneers visiting the number four Washington Red Tails. It was on NBC Saturday night. We told you about all the Washington Red Tails storylines. Coach Ron Rivera, cancer survivor, cancer free. Alex Smith, 17 surgeries to save his leg. From losing his leg, from almost having his leg amputated, losing record and making it into the playoffs, making it in dramatic fashion, beating in quotations the Eagles who basically benched their best player.
And additionally, dude, this was the first time ever that there were female coaches on both sidelines in an NFL playoff game. That's pretty cool.
Yes, and last week we told you there was familiarity for Bruce Arians and Ron Rivera. The last time a team won the division title with a losing record, which the Red Tails did this time, was in 2014 when Coach Ron Rivera's Panthers won the NFC South 7-8-1. I guess he's making a habit of this. And Bruce Arians' Cardinals went to Charlotte with an 11-5 record and got waxed 27-16. And we asked, could it happen again? Well, guess what? My Bucks made sure that didn't happen again because my Bucks ended up winning this one. But I got to talk about my player of the game, Amit. And surprising to you and everybody, it's not a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. It's Taylor Heinicke, my player of the game. Heck, I think this dude's my player of the week against all odds. And I know it was against my Bucks, but he still did an amazing job. He gets the walk-on award, in my opinion, because 26 of 44 for 306 yards, a touchdown, one pick against my Bucks, a 78.4 QBR. And this guy came out of nowhere. They gave him the starting job, and he looked like a pro. I mean, he didn't make any bad decisions on it. He threw it out of bounds when he needed to throw it away. He didn't take any bad sacks. He didn't make any bad throws. He was dropping dimes. I think the Giants need to pick up the phone and give my man a call right here, or Danny Dimes needs to relinquish that name and hand it over to Taylor Heinicke.
Yeah, and Heinicke has a crazy past, right? He's overcome a lot as well. I guess this is just part of the theme of the Washington football team now. But Heinicke was undrafted out of Old Dominion. He was released four different times. He was a backup quarterback in the Alliance of American Football. He played zero snaps, and he had not thrown a pass since 2018. So this kid literally came out of nowhere. Right, I think he's finishing his degree. He had to move his exams so that he could go play quarterback.
Math. He's studying mathematics. Yeah. Studying a major in math.
Wild story. Really, really, really a great story in terms of how this played out for him. And just happy for him. Hopefully
he's got to have a job in the NFL. Yeah. NFL teams, GMs, whoever. I think Washington should bring him back. I think he earned a spot there. I think he earned a job. I mean, we've seen Heisman Trophy winners not have a good a day as that. Just go start your first game in the playoffs against one of the best defenses in the league and see what you got, kid. And he survived. He not only survived, he thrived. So my hat's off to him, man. I have a lot of respect for him, and I know a lot of America does, because the broadcast was talking about him the whole time, his composure and how he kept it together and almost got his team close to winning. They didn't get blown out by the Bucks now, and he didn't make any errors to get his team out of it. Okay, it was a close game.
Terry McLaurin, man, the wide receiver for Washington. He is by far their number one wide receiver, and he has been in the league for only 2 years. And yet, in those two seasons, he has already caught passes from Tyler Heinicke, Alex Smith, Dwayne Haskins, Kyle Allen, Logan Thomas, Case Keenum, and Colt McCoy. Granted, two of those guys are tight ends that threw passes, but look at all those quarterbacks he's had throwing to him in just two seasons in the NFL.
Bring Taylor Heinicke back. And it was sad we didn't get to see Alex Smith play, because he got the team there, and it was a nice story to see that he came back from all the surgeries and he was able to ball out this season, but he had tightness in his leg. Man, that's an amazing story. Another hat tip from me. But let's turn to the quarterback on the other side. That's Thomas Brady, the 43-year-old grown man, Amit, that heralds my team, my Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He has now beaten 17 different teams in the playoffs. In the playoffs. He has a 31-11 career playoff record also, and he just continues to defy aging.
Yeah, Thomas has some serious money riding on the postseason due to some of the incentives in his contract. $500,000 if the Bucks made the playoffs, done. Cash that in. $750,000 if the Bucks won a playoff game, done. Got that. $1.25 million if the Bucks make the NFC Championship game. $1.75 million if they make the Super Bowl. And $2.25 million if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers win the Super Bowl and bring you home that beautiful trophy. So he's made $1.25 million in incentives so far, with another $5.25 left to make. And sticking with Tom Brady, hey, who's the one man on that Washington football team that really wanted Tom Brady? Well, that was Chase Young. He was fired up, and hey, good for him. Chase Young is who we thought Jadeveon Clowney was going to be. That's exactly who Chase Young is. But with all that talent, zero sacks, zero quarterback hits, and just one loss to chalk up for now.
He wanted Tom Brady. He definitely got Tom Brady. And I think it was mutual respect, right? You want to be the best. You want to beat the best. I think he clarified his comments to Tom Brady, man to man, in his face. I'm sure Tom Brady did a little smirk back to him, like, I got you, young fella, and we'll see what you got coming up for the rest of your career. But we had three games on Sunday also, so let's pivot to Sunday's games. And it started with the best game of Sunday's slate by far. That was the number 5 Ravens at the number 4 Titans, Amit. The Ravens won 20-13, and in my notes I have win and stomp, and we'll talk about the stomp. I watched part of this one on ESPN2. I really enjoyed the commentary. They ran the plays back. They had Mina Kimes in there. You know, Mina Kimes is a Beyond the Numbers podcast favorite, and she's so knowledgeable about football and her analysis about the game. She's also Harvard, so, you know, she brings that extra level of numbers to her analysis. They had Keyshawn Johnson in there. They had Rex Ryan in there. So I'm watching the games, and, you know, they're talking about why they would or wouldn't call this play, what this play is setting up, why they're doing this off the play action, what the defense is trying to do. It's man-to-man on the back end. Watch them go to this receiver. They wanted to match this corner on this guy. So it was really great to see and get that additional commentary. To me, it was better than watching the regular broadcast when they're like, you know, this guy had a chicken sandwich for lunch last week, and he had time on Zoom with his mom, and he went to this place, and he wears these kind of clothes, right?
I don't know what broadcast I tuned into.
Don't tell me you watched it in Spanish for like half the game.
No.
Could you imagine? It's not bad if they call it like a goal, touchdown. It would sound so exciting.
Yeah, no, you could definitely add a whole another aspect to the game with just that. But no, I had to have turned into the basement feed for Bob and his four friends who were just kind of watching the game in the background and doing their own thing. But I figured out very quickly. It took like a minute. I was like, what is happening right now? Why are they sort of kind of talking about the game on the TV, but it seems like they got something better going on wherever they're sitting? Conceptually, I think it's pretty cool that you could kind of choose.
Megacast. That's what they call it. Megacast. When they put that's it right. across all the channels. That's the power of Disney, man. The megacast. But the difference in this game, and we both talked about it, was Lamar Jackson in his first playoff victory of his 24-year-old life. Lamar ran it 16 times for 136 yards, completed 17 throws for 179 yards. And oh, by the way, he exercised some demons. People said he couldn't get it done in the playoffs, and he got it done playing his game, Amit. Running and passing, being the most athletic person on the field by far. He had a 48-yard rush touchdown, which was the second longest by a quarterback in playoff history. And like I said on that ESPN2, the Titans played it perfectly. Lamar was just more athletic. He zigged left, came back right, slowed down, sped up, and was able to score and just be faster than the Titans were.
Compare that to the Titans. Come on, Ryan Tannehill, who arguably has been absolutely incredible.
Yeah,
for the Titans.
I've been talking about him.
He threw for 165 yards compared to Lamar's 179. Derrick Henry, the beast, the king himself, rushed for 40 total yards. Compared to Lamar's 136.
Derrick Henry was limited to 4 yards, and no doubt they're talking about this on the ESPN2 broadcast, that was the Ravens game plan going in. If he can't build a head of steam, Amit, he is no good. He is just like a train, a locomotive. He's got to get it going, and once he gets it going, you can't stop. You know, but once he stopped, it's hard for him to get going. And I think the Ravens knew that going into it.
I say run I formation. So you're running the ball. But instead of having that quarterback in there, run out of the shotgun. Give him that extra space.
And that's just like arena football does it, right? Like the receivers start running before hike is called, and then they cross the line of scrimmage at full speed already. There's no way anyone can touch Derrick Henry if he's got a 10-yard head start, a full head of steam. You call hike, he's got the ball in his hand, nobody's touching him. So back to the runner, the main runner, the main event of this game was definitely Lamar Jackson. Only four quarterbacks have ever rushed for 100 yards or more in a playoff game. I'm going to run through the list for you right now. It's a top six list. Only four guys have done it, and they're on this list. Colin Kaepernick in 2012 ran for 181 yards in a playoff game. Cap, we think you should still be in the league. We talked about this in BTN 15. He was highly effective with the run and the pass. So what you're seeing from Lamar right now, think about Colin Kaepernick, who was getting it done. Lamar Jackson last year ran for 143 yards in a playoff game. Lamar this week ran for 136, as we just outlined for you guys. And then Colin Kaepernick did it in 2013. He ran for 130 yards. So the top four rushes ever by a quarterback in a playoff game is two men. Colin Kaepernick, Lamar Jackson. At number five is Michael Vick. In 2004, he rushed for 119 yards. And at number six is Donovan McNabb. In 2003 for the Philadelphia Eagles, he ran it for 107 yards. I'll go one further for you, Amit. This is Beyond the Numbers podcast, so we got to go deeper. Only two quarterbacks have ever rushed for 100 yards and a touchdown in a playoff game, and that would be number one, Colin Kaepernick, and number two, Lamar Jackson. This was also the fourth best rush margin by a road team in NFL history at plus 185. When you have Derrick Henry on the other side and you lose the rush margin by 185 yards, that is a shame.
And over the past 4 years, there have been 76 instances of teams trailing in the fourth quarter and facing a fourth and two or less between the opponent's 35 and 50-yard line. In 75 of those instances, the team went for it. The only team to punt ever in those instances in the last 4 years is the Titans, and it was this past weekend, of course.
Yeah, and like we mentioned, Derrick Henry was held to a season-low 40 yards rushing entering the game. He was averaging 126 yards per game rushing in the playoffs. And as Ahmed mentioned, he was hit at or behind the line of scrimmage on 11 of 18 carries. Going back to what we said, you got to give him a head of steam. The Ravens knew that. They stopped him. They did talk about that on ESPN too. So over, the game was over. The Ravens ran all over the Tennessee Titans logo, and it triggered Michael Ealy on on SportsCenter saying rep yo set. This contributes to a 6-game win streak for the Ravens. They just keep on winning. We'll see what they have this next week. So Ahmed, the next Sunday game we had was number 7 Chicago at number 2 New Orleans. And is it fair to say this might have been the funnest game for a couple of different reasons that we'll get to in a few minutes? Breeze, Kamara, and Thomas were all active for the first time since week 10. This was Michael Thomas's first touchdown since week 16 of last year of the 2019 season. Best receiver in the league, his first touchdown of this season. Drew Breeze was 4-for-4 targeting Deontay Harris on third down, converted all 4 for first downs. And Drew Breeze had 9 third down completions for first downs, his most in a game in the last 4 seasons. They also sent Breeze, Ahmed, to rush on fourth down and jump in the end zone with 11 broken ribs. Come on, man. You can't have the old man run it in when you got Alvin Kamara just waiting, licking his chops to get a touchdown back there.
He wants to let everyone know that even though I'm broken and I'm almost 100 years old, I can still do it.
Play for the next week, man. Y'all are still in this thing. Why would you do that? Super Bowl, sure, you jump in there. I had flashbacks to John Elway running into the end zone for the Broncos against the Packers, getting swiped by 2 or 3 guys. That was probably, you know, he went 360 in the air and totally spun on that. But that was a Super Bowl. He was trying to end his career with that win. This also, Ahmed, was the best ending I've ever seen to a game, because the Bears tight end Graham had a walk-off touchdown. One-handed grab. I'm just going to walk out of this end zone. I'm gonna just walk into the locker room. This game is over. And a lot of people were pissed because there was no extra point kick and people were mad, but it's in the rule book. If it doesn't affect the outcome of the game, there's no need to have the extra point kicked. So there was a funky ending score here, as we mentioned. And he used to play for the Saints, so I guess he knew where the exit was. He knew how to get out of there.
This was not supposed to be close at any point. This was not a team that belonged to the playoffs. They squeezed in because of this expanded format.
But now I'm worried about next week, because this means my Bucks will be playing the Saints. I'm in the largest point differential in a regular season sweep. The 2020 Saints over my Bucks are plus 46. In 1998, the Cowboys were plus 35 over the Cardinals. In 1994, the Vikings were plus 34 over the Bears. And in 1989, the Houston Oilers were plus 34 over the Steelers. And guess what? All three of those other teams lost in the decisive playoff game number 3. We'll see what my Bucks can do. Last game was November 8th. That was a long time ago, and I would argue a whole different Bucks team ago. So the nightcap game, Ahmed, which was probably the worst game of the 3 games. I think they got progressively worse on Sunday. We had like Baltimore, the Ravens and the Titans were a great game. Then we had the Saints and the Bears, which was like, this is the one that we're going to put on Nickelodeon for the kids because it was a boring game. And now you got the Browns and the Steelers, the number 6 seed Browns against the number 3 Steelers. And there's no way I would have predicted this one, Ahmed. 48-29 Browns win. No practice, no head coach, no problem. A team that had no practice, didn't have its head coach allowed to go to the game, call into the game, or anything, won. They weren't allowed to practice until Friday. Their starting guard and corner were both out with COVID. So my question to you, Ahmed, I'm going to give you some stats. 390 yards versus 553 yards. 20 first downs versus 34 first downs. Which team won the game? 390, 20 first downs, or 553, 34 first downs?
Oh, by far the 20 first downs.
No, your guess is supposed to be the other way, but definitely it was 390, 20 first downs, beat 553 yards and 34 first downs.
Listen, and let me tell you why. The reason, and I'm sorry, I definitely did not play into that the way I should have.
You're supposed to pick the team. More yards, more first downs. How did they lose? Okay, more yards, more first down for the Beyonders out there. I'm sure they would have guessed 553 with 34 correct first down beats 390 with 20 first downs. But Beyonders, you'd be wrong, because the stat I didn't share was the 5 turnovers to 0 turnovers. And we know turnovers win games, especially in the playoffs. The Pittsburgh Steelers are the fourth team in NFL history to start 11-0 and lose their first playoff game. The 2011 Packers did it. The 2005 Colts did it. The 1969 Rams did it. Big Ben had 501 passing yards. The Steelers lost 5 of their last 6 games to end the season.
The 11-0 start came with a 129 positive point differential, right? And this is where everyone thought they were the team. Yep. And you know what? And we should have known this then. When they were at 11-0, they were still the overwhelming conversation was, is this the worst 11-0 undefeated team we've ever seen? So the seeds were there early, but if we look at the last 6 games, a negative 36 point differential.
Yeah, and we've talked about it throughout the season on NFL Nuggets. They have no rush game, and when you don't have a rush game, you cannot put games away, you cannot run the clock, and you cannot have success. The most successful teams in the league always have a running game. They lost for the first time since 2003 at home to the Browns. And my boy, you know I love him. This is one of my brothers. This is one of the guys I fought and bled with the Florida Gators, Marquise Pouncey. He's had 8,596 snaps in his career. He's only had 8 fumbles. He's only lost 2 fumbles, including the playoffs. That's like less than 1%. But that's how the game started, and it was all downhill from there. We got to witness a very emotional moment between Marquise Pouncey and Ben Roethlisberger after the game. And it was just nice to see, because it was real, man. They just kept it real with each other. They were shedding tears. And that's what it means when you put your heart and soul into something. We'll go to the Browns. They're the first team with 28 points in the first quarter of a playoff game since 1969. It's the first time the Steelers have given up 35 points in the first half of any game since 1968. Think about that's an astonishing stat. It's the second most points the Browns have ever scored in an NFL postseason game. Like I said, I have no words. This game was unbelievable. I mean, it was just hard to watch. It was painful. It was everything that could go right for the Browns went right. Everything that could go wrong for the Steelers went wrong. I mean, this game was, I think they used all their magic. The Browns used all their magic they had left, and I don't think they're going to have anything left for next week. I don't know.
I agree with you on that.
We'll see what the divisional round brings, and we'll give you guys our updates and our predictions coming up. Let's wrap this thing up.
We gave you a rundown of the national championship game highlights and how the Buckeyes never really had a chance, and how Devontae Smith is NFL ready for sure. Telly took the time to remind you that the Gators are the runner-up based on their performance against Alabama during the regular season.
Go Gators!
In our NFL preview, we were shocked by the Rams and impressed by the Red Tails' new quarterback, Tyler Heinicke.
But remember, everyone, Monday is Martin Luther King Day, and let's remember that you cannot overcome hate with hate. You can only overcome hate with love. So we want to leave you with that thought. We're trying to grow the pod. So if you listen to us on Spotify, what is really cool is you can now add us to your timeline on Instagram. Be sure to share and subscribe. Ask your friends, have you gone beyond the numbers of sports this week? Thank you for going beyond the numbers with us. We're a weekly podcast dedicated to going beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. We're available on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Whatever you're listening on now, Please be sure to click the follow or subscribe button to get our latest content.
And remember, you can find us on Instagram, Beyond the Numbers Podcast, and on Twitter at Beyond TN Podcast.
Until next time,
peace.